And it's Beefcake back here again with us in the advanced stage, which you should all be at by now if you've listened to the earlier boot camp and you've been posting the mantra. I believe you're ready for listening to the advanced stage. And of course, here I do sometimes venture off the topic of the mantra, but you should be advanced enough to know when I'm saying something that wouldn't be useful to go out and post, that would definitely delve into tailgating material and sometimes gets a little bit off the topic of white genocide. But when we're out posting the mantra, we keep it to white genocide. I just say that first, so if you're jumping ahead, if you're a new listener and you're starting out listening to the advanced stage, which this is probably going to be the second installment of the advanced stage, that you know to go back and do that so you don't get confused about stuff I say that's off topic, or I don't get a butt beefcake message in my inbox that's, you know, what does this have to do with white genocide? Well, this might be discussing some of the puzzle pieces, not the big picture. But when you're out talking about white genocide, it's the big picture. And that allows me here to segue into a topic that I want to call the dust, the turds, and the elephant. Because white genocide is essentially the elephant in the room. But this goes beyond just the mantra about white genocide and really has to do with anything that happens to be practical politics. The reason for this is that our opponents, Team Anti-White, as well as the people who in many cases run a civilization from a standpoint of sort of a taboo on information or of thinking outside the box, that closed system thinking that Horace is always talking about breaking out of and getting into that open system thinking that's more natural for us to do. Now, when I say natural for us, I mean white people. We don't like confined systems. We like a lot of freedom. We like a lot of freedom to think. I believe that is innate to our race. I'm convinced of it from everything I've seen. Unfortunately, one of the things we like to do as white people is turn things into a religion. We like to create beliefs and views that sort of dominate our thinking, that get in the way of us accessing new information. We become dismissive of things that don't fit in our worldview, and we try to rationalize new information to fit with that worldview and reject information outright that can't be fit with it. Take a look at like history classes that teach a very conventional view of history, but very much like to just dismiss megalithic artifacts that obviously need some sort of an explanation, but the time periods that these things were built in on our world were so far before the conventional view of history can account for that a lot of historians will just dismiss it or come up with some very overly simple views on saying how they were made. You know, you got the Easter Island head sticking up out of the sand and, oh, they were made by men in loincloths. Seems unlikely if these are the heads of giant statues sticking out of the sand that have been swallowed by the sands of time. A conventional view of history just doesn't have room for an anomaly like this. Yet, if you're an open system thinker, you realize that there has to be an explanation for something like this that's rational, but might require a very broader view of history. You might have to have a much larger view of things in order to incorporate this. Your model of history might just not be big enough. You know, you might be looking at the tip of an iceberg. That's open system thinking and pointing out those things that don't fit with the conventional view of history that aren't accounted for is like pointing out the elephant in the room. It's a point that you're making that is unignorable once pointed out. That is what I'm trying to segue into here when I talk about the elephant in the room. The elephant happens to be, and I'm not talking about this as a symbol for the Republican Party. If you're just some person stumbling upon White Genocide Project and you're listening to this podcast right now, jumping ahead, thank you very much. That's not what I mean by the elephant. You should know that. I'm talking about the elephant from the figure of speech, the elephant in the room, the unignorable thing that gets in the way of everything else that when you point it out, nobody can ignore. Now, unfortunately, in reality, you're going to have to keep pointing out that elephant many, many times. And by the way, I'd like to know who created the figure of speech, the elephant in the room. I want to know what the origin of that is, because that's a great meme. Very useful. Well, anyway, part of the mantra thinking, or in pointing out things to people that have to show them that they've been clinging to a belief system that simply isn't true, that just doesn't work, is when you point out the obvious contradictions that become unignorable the more often you point them out. And you have to keep pointing them out, but at a certain point, they have to acknowledge that elephant is in the room, and you have to do that by focusing on the elephant, not the dust on the walls and not the turds the elephant's been leaving on the floor. You know, they can explain those away forever, but when you point out the major problem in their worldview, that just gets in the way of everything else. You know, you have a guy who says it would be like having a hypothetical conversation with a buddy, you know, and somebody brings up the "what would you do" thing. We've all heard these before. Everyone that's ever sat around a campfire having a couple of beers with a buddy, and somebody says, as sort of a little mind trick, you know, if you were to get shot in the head, but you received $10 million afterwards, what would you do with the money? Well, the elephant in the room there is that you wouldn't be alive to spend the money. Therefore, it wouldn't do you any good. Okay? And yet you're still in the way a lot of people think about the white genocide situation is they have this idea that you'll still be able to get by in a world where whites are blended out of existence, but the problem is you're not going to be here. Your descendants won't look like you. You're gone. History finito. You're worrying about a world future and all these other things going on when your very people themselves would have a future taken away from them. That is the elephant in the room. Every single other thing that's important to you isn't going to mean anything if your people are wiped out. Everything that's important to your people, your culture, your history, every other puzzle piece on that big box that happens to matter to you in your existence doesn't mean anything if your people are wiped out. Everything that matters to white people, all of your beliefs and ideas, nothing's going to matter if your people aren't there to have any of it. You know, none of that stuff matters. Okay, if that is the elephant in the room, that is the that's the gunshot before the $1 million, $10 million, you know, to get paid for doing that you wouldn't be there to spend, that little mind trick. And when people are talking about dust and turds, it's like they're saying, well, if you invested in a high yield return fund, you know, ignoring the fact that they're not going to be there to spend it. Or people talking about what they're going to do to retire that are younger than 40 and are expecting to have a nice cushy retirement and have a bunch of non-whites in senior care homes taking care of them, living in a population that is vast majority non-white, and think that they're going to get by nicely because they took care of their money when they were younger. I got news for you. It's not going to work out. You know, if you want to have a first world standard of living at any age group, you're going to need to live in a first world country. And there's only really one race that makes those: white people. We make the nicest places to live. Don't ask me, a pro-white, if we make the nicest places to live. Ask an anti-white. They're the ones that are always saying that we need to have open borders because we make the nicest places to live. When someone points out that this multiculturalism and diversity is only for white countries and all white countries, you always have the anti-white say, well, nobody wants to live in a black country. Nobody would want to live in one of those Asian countries. And Asians can make some decent places to live too. In fact, I'm actually convinced Africans can make places to live that are quite comfortable for them to live in. They might not have the same quality of life that is normal for white people. They might not have the same level of technology, but I think when they're left to their own devices, they're a lot happier than with someone who's anti-white trying to turn them into white people. I don't think they like it either. But the bottom line is, a lot of the thinking that people do and a lot of the beliefs they cling to have major obvious flaws in their ideas that stand out and simply need somebody to point out the elephant in the room. And this can be on many other subjects besides white genocide. I know I bring it back to that a lot, but hey, we're on whitegenocideproject.com, so I try to relate it to white genocide when I can. And the biggest thing that I want folks to understand is that when you're pointing out the flaws in thinking and you're pointing out the bad logic, you know, you can talk to people about things that don't matter as much that they can keep dismissing. You can talk about the crime stats that I compare to the dust on the wall. You can say affirmative action. Why do we need affirmative action if race doesn't exist? That's an unfair policy, singling people out based on skin color, but if race doesn't matter and race doesn't exist, why would you need affirmative action? Good job pointing out a contradiction, but that's the turd on the floor. It's nasty. It's hard to ignore, but anti-whites have learned how to clean that turd up off the floor. You know, they've learned to say, oh, well, you know, white people have it so good, and then they'll make more racial distinctions, even though they claim it doesn't exist. I know it's frustrating dealing with that, but in a sense, they've learned to ignore the turd. However, when you start talking about white genocide, they just lose their mind because you just pointed out the elephant in the room. That elephant in the room is what matters. It's the big picture. It's the big thing that you can't get around. And they're going to still try to deny it. They can justify why the elephant's there. They can try denying the elephant's there. But everybody else sees the elephant. Everybody sees. That's what you're talking about. You're talking about the elephant in the room. Whether or not they're justifying the presence of said elephant, whether they happen to be denying the elephants there, you're still talking about the elephant. And of course, the primary thing we do in practical politics is spread the meme. We're talking about white genocide. We're spreading the meme, the theme, the concept. That's what matters ultimately. We don't necessarily have to convince the audience. We just have to expose them to the idea over and over and over again until it sinks in their head that we're going to have to do something about this elephant. But at this point, we're spreading the meme. You know, a lot of folks are concerned if they don't win an argument or something like that. Well, if you do it right, you should. But again, it's not to argue. Arguing is where people switch points all the time because they're just trying to show that they're smarter than their opponent. We don't need to do that. We just need to point something out over and over again in front of the audience because they're who matters. You know, you can have somebody make a million points about elephants and make a million points about the dust on the wall and the turds on the floor, and they can jump around all over the place. But if you keep pointing out the elephant is in the room, you're winning. You're doing good. And on the elephant in the room, how does it relate to things that go beyond just white genocide? In practical politics, and I want to pick an issue that most pro-whites would agree with because I don't want to start arguments on, you know, things other than white genocide, but here's one. I don't know any pro-white who happens to support routine infant circumcision. This is one that is obviously not a normal cultural practice for our people, for white people. We are sort of revolted by things that we see as mutilation. A lot of white people, even though we're accused of doing all the evil things in history, most white people I know don't really have a stomach for human suffering. We don't like the idea of people in agony or despair or a lot of physical pain. It's just, you know, a lot of pro-whites that I know are really concerned about the future of white people. It doesn't really come from a place of wanting to see harm come to non-whites. You know, that we're not really into pain and suffering. And that brings me back to the subject of routine infant circumcision. It's not one of our normal cultural practices. It came from our religious beliefs that are religions that were not innate to our people, that are those Babylonian mystery religions that were brought to Europe a long time ago. It happens to be a cultural practice that's common in Judaism and Islam, and it's not a big shock to anyone listening to me that a very large group of anti-whites do happen to be Jewish. You know, that's the biggest problem when you wonder why a lot of pro-whites and white nationalists don't like Jews. Well, the reason is because a lot of the actions that they've observed a lot of Jews taking happen to be anti-white, and they also happen to push a lot of their cultural ideas onto other people they live among. And in the United States, and if you're not in the United States and you've heard rumors about this, it's true that in major parts of the United States, circumcision is routinely performed on infants. And it is a violation of human rights. And you've probably heard that term before, a violation of human rights. That's the big elephant in the room. That's something that I actually have other friends that they're not necessarily, you know, because you're not going to get all your friends in your personal life to be on board with white genocide. It's just unfortunately not the way it works. However, I kind of thought, you know, anytime I have the opportunity to kick my enemy in the balls, I'm going to take it. And if they create other problems for a large group of anti-whites by being vocal about another message that anti-whites don't like, and anti-whites have to spread their effort all over the place, that helps us. So I told some friends of mine a while back, actually, when I had gotten on board with the mantra and was starting to figure out how it's thinking, they said, what do I say to these people that support routine infant circumcision that stands out? I said, well, you got to stop talking about all the small details about it and the rolling action of the foreskin and all the nerve endings that are lost and stuff like that. You need to accuse your opponent of the biggest possible crime you can charge them with. And in this case, it's a violation of human rights. Bodily integrity is a human right, and removing part of somebody else's body without their consent is a violation of human rights. It doesn't matter if it's not painful. It doesn't matter if every kid were to survive it. It doesn't matter if it never got botched and some poor tyke didn't lose his penis ever, that it was always done correctly. It still wouldn't matter because it's a violation of human rights. And that's an example of pointing out the elephant in the room. And sure enough, we've seen a lot of stuff coming out of Europe and a lot of stuff in the United States recently, where you have these groups of people called intactivists who are calling it a violation of human rights. And what they're doing by calling it a violation of human rights, that would be a good use of practical politics because they're pointing out the big thing. They're pointing out they're making it nice and concise and simple, and they're pointing out that elephant in the room. They're pointing out the unignorable thing. You know, their opponents for a long time were talking about how it's easier to keep clean and all this horse shit. And the intactivists would bring up good points and say, that's not true. You're not supposed to clean it on an infant. It naturally frees up at some stage in early childhood. At that point, he needs to be taught to, you know, just roll it back and clean it with warm water and not get soap under it. It's actually easy to clean. You know, that's getting into an argument with the pro-circ person over whether or not it's cleaner or not. And of course, the truth is in the side of the person who's against the practice. If they're arguing about little details like that, they're not pointing out that big thing in the mind of the audience that needs to stick there. And that big thing is that removing part of someone else's body for any reason happens to be a violation of human rights. And that's a very bold charge. It's not quite genocide, but under international law, violating human rights that's a big deal. And that's one that, if I'm not talking about white genocide, if that's gotten overwhelmed with that for a while and I just want to do something that's a little bit easier just to get my mind refreshed or something like that, but still be moving in a positive direction on a secondary issue. Of course, I'm pro-white first and foremost. Anyone listening to me this, I am. But there are some secondary issues that do mean a little something to me, and I might sometimes throw a white rabbit giving an Easter egg to somebody else who is at the very least causing problems for our enemy. And I gave them a couple of these things to use whenever I'd see the topic come up. I'd tell them, I'd pull them aside and say, quit talking about these little details. Point out the elephant in the room. They're violating human rights. That's the big deal. The cool thing I saw on this was how practical politics works. Now you're probably seeing it being called that all over the place, and a few were beforehand, but all they needed was a little bird to tell them to keep pointing out the biggest thing that's wrong with it, and to continuously point that out and never let their opponent slip away from it, and to encourage others to do so. And sure enough, I've been seeing it blow up. I've been seeing a lot of it, and I don't know if it all necessarily comes from Beefcake, if maybe they would have figured that out on their own. Maybe there's a few other white rabbits out there telling them to call it a violation of human rights. But sure enough, pointing out the elephant in the room has been working for them quite well. And of course, they're also causing our enemy at the top a big headache, since a lot of our enemies support routine infant circumcision. Now they're busy trying to get the intactivist silence, which isn't going to work now that they're on a consistent message. And at the same time, we got lots of room to be spreading our consistent message, that primary problem, white genocide. Because after all, if white people had our own home, if we happen to have large exclusive countries for our own people to live in, we wouldn't be dealing with things like routine infant circumcision, would we? No, I don't think that's normal for our people whatsoever. But again, you know, I'm trying to give examples of when you're communicating with people, and you have to make a point about something, you have to point out the biggest logical flaw. You can't be looking for the little details. Even if it's true, you got to point out that big picture. And it relates to things beyond just the mantra and white genocide. The whole thing with like the war on drugs in the United States being an abysmal failure. Drugs have been illegal for a long time, but it's an abysmal failure. You got more people in prison than the rest of the world combined, and more drug use than ever. It simply doesn't work, and it's an abysmal failure. Okay, that would be something that people that are against the war on drugs could say. Whether or not you do disagree or agree with me on the war on drugs, just go talk about white genocide. That's really why we're here. But I'm trying to give you examples of how this works and how the power of practical politics is such an asset to us, because that open system thinking, it makes you a powerful asset. The ability to stay on message and talk about something and point out the elephant in the room, not focusing on the dust and the turds on the floor, but the damn elephant making it. That happens to be a very great power politically, and it makes you an asset to any team that you're going to be on. But you have to remember that people cling to their beliefs. They cling to their worldview very, very strongly, and to shake themselves free of it, or a lot of times they can't shake themselves free of it. They need someone to come shake them out of it. It has to be pointed out to them the contradictions. It has to be pointing out the things that they're trying to deny, but it has to be the biggest ones that they can't deny. And you do it over and over and over again. They'll still try to dismiss the elephant. Yes, they will, but you got to point it out over and over and over again. They'll do all sorts of crazy things. You got to point out the flaw to them. Now, right now, it's just a point of the crazy things people will do when they cling to beliefs that are illogical in the real world. And the only way to shake them out of it is you have to point out the big problem with what they're doing, the big contradiction, the big one, the unignorable one, over and over and over. And eventually they lose sleep over it. It really upsets them. They don't like it. They don't like having their worldview shaken. Nobody likes having their worldview shaken. But we have a tendency to turn things into a religion. We have a tendency to ignore things that don't fit with that worldview, because one of the hardest things for people to do is to change their worldview. One of the hardest things for them to do is to change anything they've been doing, partially due to a form of self-righteousness that I think affects white people a lot. We have a tendency to turn things not only into a religion, but everything into a competition for morality. Everybody wants to prove how big of a good guy they are, how they can do a better job at living to the morals and standards that are set for them. And they sort of turned it into a contest. I'm sure anyone who's white listening to me right now has a friend of theirs who's white that has told them how they would have morally, upstandingly done a better job in a certain situation. We've all heard that. Well, if I was in that situation, this is what I would have done. This is how I would have handled it. I wouldn't have cheated on my wife with that girl at work. I wouldn't have done that. I would have that. Okay? They like to hold themselves to this really high moral standard, which is one of the reasons they get so spiteful and angry when you try challenging their worldview on the modern religion, which is political correctness. Anti-whiteism is one of the main pillars of the religion of political correctness. And so a lot of them will cling to that. And of course, they're going to spit charges of heresy at you, because that's what self-righteous white people do. And you got to keep pointing out to them the major logical flaw in that all of this race not mattering idea to them, and saying anybody that thinks it matters is a bad guy, is actually leading to genocide, which is an even worse crime. That they happen to be supporting genocide, that they're not the one who has the moral high ground, that all these things they're supporting happen to be leading to the genocide of their own people. And that, of course, that's definitely the elephant statement, and that's pointing it out over and over and over again. And of course, the more concise, the better. The more concise you can make it, if it were possible to make the mantra shorter than it is, it obviously would be. And I know we have many mantras to fit in places where the whole mantra doesn't fit, but of course, anti-whites will bring things up that would have been covered in the original mantra. Yeah, they'll try doing that anyway, but it helps for the audience to have seen it beforehand. They'll call us these names. Of course, it's good to point out that your opponent's going to resort to name calling before your opponent calls you names. But what I want a lot of us to do is always be wary of the fact that we have a tendency to cling to beliefs. And I want us as well as pointing out the elephant in the room, that by pointing that elephant out, even if it doesn't seem like you're making any progress, with a certain group of anti-whites, when you point it out, you got to realize that they are going to think about this later. You know, they are going to lose sleep over it. They are going to see evidence of it later. The audience, even if they were afraid to chime in, they're just sitting down with their popcorn and reading. They're going to have to think about it later. That's the one nice thing about pointing out the elephant in the room. They can try denying it. They can be so angry about it, but they got to think about it later because, unfortunately, while they're cleaning up the dust on the wall and they're brushing up the turds on the floor, they can't ignore the elephant standing right behind them that you pointed out. That's the analogy I'm using right there, but they can't ignore it because it's right there. And white genocide is right there. And so they can act like they're not hearing you. They can play la 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 all they want, but at a certain point of hearing it over and over again, they have to pick up on it. And their worldview has to start to change. And when their worldview changes, another funny thing happens with our people. After time, you start going, well, wait a second. If I was lied to on this one thing, how do I know that I wasn't lied to about so many other things? And pretty soon they start questioning a whole lot of things, which they should be. That's part of open system thinking, is every bit of information you should be able to go back over and re-examine and start questioning it. That's definitely question everything is definitely part of open system thinking. Absolutely. I'll point out that when you have the information that's being taught to us in our universities, especially needs to be questioned. Even the hard sciences. How do we know that what they're telling us on anything else is true, that any of their studies mean anything, when it's the same people who told you that your race is responsible for all the evils of history that are also telling you that your race doesn't exist, the same ones that tell you that there's no biological reality behind race, that they couldn't determine somebody's race from a blood sample, even though a forensics pathologist who graduates from said university has to be able to do that to keep his job. You know, when we point out the obvious elephant in the room that professors are telling you they have all these studies that prove race doesn't exist, and you point out that they would lose their job if they did, that they, if they're tenured, they'd probably have their life made a living hell for them, because in the political environment in most universities, where political correctness is the religion, if you come out with a study that proves that race exists, you just made your life a living hell. That's if you don't get blacklisted from ever working at a university again. And so, of course, any study they come out with is going to say race doesn't exist. But now, here's the unignorable thing I'm going to point out to us. If they've been lying to us about that, you don't know what else you've been getting lied to about. You don't know what else about history they've been lying to you about. But by pointing out the contradiction right there, and the bigger contradictions, the better, you can see that they've been lying. And now I say, if they've been lying about one thing, how do you know that they've been honest about anything else? And the answer is you don't. And therefore, it all needs to be questioned. Everything from history to gender mechanics, to how things work between our genders. You know, there's a lot of feminist stuff. I mentioned in the last advanced stage how feminism is very anti-white. Well, it's also been used to damage the way genders interrelate to each other. The view that men have of women in many situations, the idea that men and women think exactly alike and behave the same way to emotional stimuli, to information around them, is actually silly. The idea that the only difference between genders are sex organs and hormones. I don't believe that for a second. That's what they tell you in universities, but again, they also tell you your race doesn't exist and your race is responsible for all the evils of history. How do we know what they're talking about when it comes to gender are true? If you believe every single thing that feminists tell you about gender, that doesn't make any sense. Again, in shaking people from belief systems they cling to, I say it's best to point out the biggest flaw that you can think of, and point it out over and over again until you drill it through their head that what they've been doing has an obvious big problem with it. And that's the elephant in the room. And if you point out the little things, that doesn't tend to work as good as the big things. So the bigger of a thing that you can point out, the better. They can deal with the dust on the walls. They can deal with the turds on the floor. But the one thing that they cannot deal with, that nobody who defends the nothing, that Bob Whitaker talks about, that nothingness that people have been basing their entire worldview on, those belief systems based in horse shit, they can deal with it when you point out the dust on the walls. They can ignore it when you point at the turds on the floor, but they cannot deal with it when you point out the elephant making it. And thus concludes Another installment of Beefcake's Advanced Stage. I hope that I've challenged your thinking a little bit, or at the very best entertained you before you go out and post the mantra.